Thank you, Bobby. It used to be easy to be an expert. All you needed was to be out of town and have some slides. Now you have to be out of town, have PowerPoint, and one of these little cool laser deals. So I guess I am. But we are grateful to be here kicking off. This is a new ministry for me as the director of the Gein Center. And we are looking forward to having a number of conferences here at the seminary, outreaching to the community, both for our students, but particularly for those in the surrounding area, of marriage and family issues. This being one that is near and dear to my heart, obviously it's the one I selected first, and Sandy was kind enough to agree to come up and help with this, our first foray into the conferencing here at Southern Seminary. It takes a good bit of courage to come, for those of you that are in the midst of this. I know you'd rather be anywhere else than at a conference discussing this, but we hope that know that you have been prayed for over these past months, and that there are students here in pastoral ministries and crisis counseling, as Bobby mentioned, and thank you for that very wonderful introduction, that want to know how better to help so that we don't say stupid things, so that we don't do stupid things. And we recognize that by not knowing how common the problem is, or some of the emotional, the roller coaster, the pressure cooker, the kind of things it's been described as, we can unknowingly hurt people. So we've got a busy schedule today, but you'll see in front of you a pad. Take one page off of that and use that to write down any questions or areas that you hope that we would address. We will pick that up early and through the course of the conference try to weave that in, and then there will be some schedule question and answer times. But we have found that there's certain areas where people come wanting us to touch on, and we want you to leave feeling like we have addressed your need. And both Sandy and I will stay around a little afterwards if you have a particular question. Obviously, as a physician, I know not to second guess the doctor who has your records, done the exam, looked at your lab work, so I'm not here to tell you those kind of things. We'll be speaking in more broad and general terms, but hopefully to encourage you that what I have found as I've traveled around speaking is that the medical community is really fairly unified. You can get good treatment, West Coast, East Coast, in the middle, if you have a caring, compassionate physician that is up to date and interested in treatment. It's not like you have to necessarily go somewhere else unless it's a very specified, very specialized, even experimental kind of procedure. And the fact is, when I went to medical school at UK down the road, there wasn't much known. This was this century, although I guess depending how you count centuries, maybe not. But what we knew about infertility back then was rest, go home, and take Clomid. That pretty well summed up infertility treatment back then, and we have come a long way. But as I stand here now, I suspect that the next 20 years will show the same kind of difference, so that what we didn't even imagine now, like then we didn't even imagine the immunologic system and the impact it plays, that there will be some of those kind of discoveries then. So we prayerfully wait and watch and study and let God sort of open those avenues for us. Now, I'm grateful also to our media services and the help we're getting from them, the support. It's really nice. We've done conferences in some very challenging circumstances, and this is about as nice as it gets. The direction that we'll be going is to try to keep in mind throughout that you're more than a person, and certainly more than just the body parts that are examined in the infertility workup, but you have not only an intellect, which we hope to challenge, emotions, which are just intimately tied to this process, and very differently so from men to women. And we hope to encourage you. I cannot tell you the number of couples who have shared how differently they face this problem, how good it was to hear that it's pretty much okay that men and women approach this in different times, in different ways, with different responses. And that doesn't mean that someone doesn't care. It doesn't mean that someone is just callous. Basically, we just need to learn how best to help and encourage one another. There'll be some spiritual time, and we will talk about some of the physical aspects, but to try to put it all together so it's not dissociated. You're not an infertile couple. You're not this, you're not that, but you're a person created and loved by God that is struggling with something. And what I can tell you is, regardless of where you are in your life, there are some struggles that you will face, infertility being a huge one. And as Sandy will outline a little more clearly, often the first major crisis that young couples face. Because they're at an early part of life, everything seems to be going strong, and then this comes in. So this first lecture, we want to get all on the same page. For those of you that have been treatment a long time, this is old hat, but let's refresh so that as we talk together, we all talk in the same language. The definition is the inability to conceive after 1 year of unprotected intercourse, or the inability to carry a pregnancy to term. The problem with that is if you take that too literally, then women who are not ovulating at all and having no cycles think that they ought to wait a year, which is inappropriate. Men with either erectile dysfunction or ejaculatory dysfunction, there's no reason to wait a year. There's some things that can be learned quite early. If there's a bad family history or something unusual that warrants investigation, there's no sense waiting the year. Now, one thing I learned, we were in Texas for 22 years and then moved up here to Kentucky 6 months ago. I don't know what you all have in the air, but it's, and if you take decongestant sinuses, then you're just dry and you can't talk. So if you'll forgive me, I'll drink from time to time. This is water, it's a Baptist institution, don't worry. I'll be fine. Secondary infertility, inability to conceive or carry a child to term after one or more live births. This is important to understand because you get no sympathy. You get no sympathy from the infertile couples because they say, you've got one, we don't have one. And then from the couples who have families say, well, you've got one, what's the issue? But if your desire as a couple is to have more children, this is a profound need and a profound desire. And so we need to encourage folks in these lines as well. Now, one of the facts that I think is the most eye-opening for the students that I have the privilege of teaching is how common this situation is. And so we need to know, these are rough figures, but 1 in 6 couples of childbearing age, and the eventually half that go on seeking treatment and experience a live birth is probably a bit higher than that now than it was when these studies first came out. But that still leaves a lot of people on this roller coaster. And besides the inability to conceive, we have to consider the pregnancy loss, because this is a profound loss, and also husbands and wives face this so differently that it can be very destructive to marriages. And let me confess up front that Sandy, in our heart and our spouses as we pray for you, is that this devastating circumstance won't pull you apart. Because 600,000 a year in the U.S., 120,000 suffer at least their third consecutive loss. Estimated 30 to 50% of all conceptions end in pregnancy loss. That's remarkably high, isn't it? I think we fail to appreciate how bad we are as a species at reproducing. And I think the answer to that is found in Scripture. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But in fact, this draws us to our knees, many of us. And it's one of the just huge problems. And if you find yourself in this circumstance, how many of you got some helpful hints from friends and relatives once they knew you were having a problem? And how helpful were those hints? Not. Thank you. Yes, I think that's pretty well it. How about, these are some of my favorites. Want me to show your wife how it's done? Want kids? Borrow mine. Just trust God when God becomes a four-syllable word. You've got it good without kids. And the ever popular, just relax. Isn't that one great? That is perhaps the best piece of advice, or the worst piece of advice, certainly the most common piece of advice. Well, it's mostly a woman's problem. After all, it's all in her head. She wants children too much, or she's too into her career. The solution is relax. Relax. We can all say that together. Well, let's look at that and see if we can, if not put it to death, at least slap it silly here today. 30%, when we do a thorough evaluation, 30%, I use just the rule of thirds because I'm simple. A third the female, a third the male, a third both, which doesn't exactly work out because there's some that we still don't know. But this percentage was a lot higher when I started because we had no idea about the immunologic, the antibody antigen situation, which now we can answer some of those questions, and over time some therapies are developing. You have to understand that the first thing is diagnosis. Then come the treatments. And usually when you have a new diagnosis, there's a half a dozen treatments until we figure out which one is successful, if at all. So where you find yourself in the timeline may determine whether they even know what it is that's the problem or whether the treatment that is used is successful. So 95, most of the time, there is a diagnosable medical reason for which no amount of relaxing will help. Does it help? Most couples, when they first start trying to achieve a pregnancy, are not stressed out. Most of them are looking forward to it, an exciting time. They've planned everything. They've done all the right things. And that's not what causes the stress. The stress is when it doesn't happen and when the doctor then looks across the table and says, well, there might be a problem and we need to start looking into it. That is indeed a stress, and it does cause certain kinds of hormonal environmental problems. But nothing that Clomid, Pergonol, and all that stuff can't overcome. It's a very small piece of the puzzle, and it comes secondarily. So the advice to relax, all I can tell you is just smile and nod, because you've heard it before, and I don't know what else you do with it. Here's another favorite. Standing on your... Have any of you heard that one? Come on, you know you have. Now, with most of these myths, there's just that little touch of truth. Someone observed in the medical profession that if a woman stands immediately after intercourse, that a good bit of the seminal fluid runs out. So they thought, gee, maybe if we leave her lying down for a little while, more of the semen will stay near the cervix, more of the sperm will get in, pregnancy rates will go up. And then they thought, well, if we do that, maybe if you just elevate your hips on a pillow a little bit, that'll keep the cervix in the seminal pool, might do better. Somehow it went from that, which is, it's certainly not harmful. You know, 5 or 10 minutes, all the sperm that are viable are going to probably get there. But it's just gone to the standing on your head. People will tell you this. People, absolute strangers will tell you to do this kind of stuff. It's amazing. Bet you're having fun trying. Bet you're not. Once the doctor tells you when, how, and brings you in for an examination to see if you did it right, it ceases to be fun. And for the husbands who are put on a schedule, well, we need you for a postcoital test at 11, so you need to cut off work and cut. Boy, the chances of that failing are enormous, and we at the medical office know that, so we try to make the window large and a lot of time and a lot. I had the world's best nurse, and she could encourage folks, because it just sometimes won't work under pressure. It's not a lot of fun in the middle of this. And we'll talk a bit about this, but just so you got some stats, 56% of couples report a decrease in frequency of sexual relations. Both women and men report a decrease in sexual satisfaction. Sexual difficulties are 5 times those of the couple that doesn't have this diagnosis. What's that tell you? This isn't easy. This is hard stuff, and it's really hard on a marriage. Now, you may remember this. I show this slide to my students just so they'll know. This is the normal male-female sexual response cycle. This is without the diagnosis, without hormones and hormone therapy. This does not happen in treatment oftentimes because we've changed the environment entirely. We've changed the thinking process. We've changed the focus. It's as distracting as can be. So I put that up here just to remind you that it used to be that way, but this is not the way it is in the midst of treatment cycles, particularly on the day when it's time, and you know it's time. So we're going to suggest to you that that's so artificial that to try to make that the romantic event of the month may be a difficult thing to achieve. And speaking of hormones, just for fun, because as a doctor you're required to show at least 2 of these kind of slides, these are the difference. Now you see, both men and women have testosterone. Men have 10 to 15 times the amount as women. That's important to know. These are normals and some averages. This is the normal cycle here, without Clomid, without Pergonol, without Lupron or any of the other things. See the nice, beautiful synchrony, the gentle slopes. While not predictable absolutely, the astute husband, who is to live with his wife in an understanding way, will understand that each day of the cycle, things are just a little bit different. And the wise man understands these things and realizes that at this part of the cycle, life is good. You are handsome. Things are beautiful. At this part of the cycle, perhaps not. You better be careful. Now, I just told you that's what things are like normally. This is what it's like once we give you Clomid, Pergonol, and everything else. There is nothing normal about a stimulated cycle. There are some folks, some women, that just go bazonkers on Clomid, and others where it hardly affects at all. Some, the same thing on Pergonol, where they're just from outer space. The hormones are totally out of grasp, and the wise husband would realize this. And kind of get in there and be sympathetic, because this is overwhelming. You can't think straight, you don't feel right, and it's just an up and down, unpredictable deal. Let me encourage you, men, if you get nothing else, to remember this slide and what it means, and what it means to you. Then there's the ever-popular adoption, which cures infertility, as you know. Is that true? Well, sure, you've heard of somebody that adopted and then had a baby, haven't you? Doesn't that prove it? 5% of couples who quit treatment and adopt conceive. 5% of couples who quit treatment and choose not to adopt conceive. What does that tell you? The adoption is and we're going to talk about adoption a bit. It's a wonderful thing. It is not the treatment for infertility, and it does not satisfy all of the same losses. So there are different issues, and if you're in the midst of trying to balance those, we'd like to help you walk through that and think through it. We don't claim to know what's right for you before God, how you should answer that question, but we want to put it out there to recognize that it's a legitimate concern, and men and women often approach this differently and at different times of their life. Real Christians, since we're at a Baptist institution, real Christians are against any assisted reproductive technologies. Now, the fact that I have it listed as myth probably gives you a clue that that's not what I believe. So when we get to that part and we talk through the ethics and what's actually done, let's think through it. I'm not going to try to tell you what is right or wrong, but to help you understand, my problem mostly is that people who determine and say this without knowing what any of the procedures are. Sometimes the reproductive technology that solves infertility is an antibiotic or thyroid hormone or a rather simple surgery for something that didn't develop properly. And so we'll talk more about that. But I think wisdom is necessary. I think there are some things that you would be wise to avoid. But I believe there's a vast array of treatments that are available to the thoughtful, prayerful person. All right, it is now my privilege to introduce for the second half of this first hour my co-author and co-missionary friend, and truly it is an honor. We have traveled the roads together much, and with your husband Gary and my wife Jane, who's standing at the back door, you should have met her at the front desk. So let me turn it over to her. We'll go, and I'll have one more chance before we have the first break. So, Sandy?